Log Talk Radio.
You know how hard it is. No, being a woman, a black woman at that, in this white man's world, sometimes we overlook the fact that we can ride hard in our situation. We don't be knowing the pain we cause. This white man's world, this white man's world. I ain't saying I'm innocent at all. In this white man's world, it's all for all those times that I messed up, but we messed up.
Dear sister, got me twisted up in prison, I miss you. Crying, looking at my nieces and my nephews picture. They say don't let this cruel world get you. Kinda suspicious, swearing one day you might leave me for somebody that's richer. Twist the cap off the bottom, I take a sip and see tomorrow. Gotta make it if I have to beg a bottle. Reading love letters, late night, locked down and quiet. Your brothers don't see they mail, best believe we ride. Eating Jack Mac, staring at the walls, silent.
Bye.
Long St. Cole, ding all the real OGs, we out.
The seal and the Constitution reflect the thinking of the founding fathers that this was to be a nation by white people and for white people. Native Americans, blacks, and all other non-white people were to be the burden bearers for the real citizens of this nation.
My name is Asada Shakur, and I was born and raised in the United States. I am a descendant of Africans who were kidnapped and brought to the Americas as slaves. I spent my early childhood in the racist, segregated South. I later moved to the northern part of the country, where I realized that black people were equally victimized by racism and oppression. I grew up and became a political activist, participating in student struggles, the anti-war movement, and most of all, in the movement for the liberation of African Americans in the United States. I later joined the Black Panther Party, an organization that was targeted by the COINTELPRO program, a program that was set up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation to eliminate all political opposition to the U.S. government's policies, to destroy the black liberation movement in the United States, to discredit activists, and to eliminate potential leaders. Under the COINTELPRO program, many political activists were harassed, imprisoned, murdered, or otherwise neutralized. As a result of being targeted by COINTELPRO, I, like many other young people, was faced with the threat of prison, underground, exile, or death. The FBI, with the help of local police agencies, systematically fed false accusations and fake news articles to the press, accusing me and other activists of crimes we did not commit. Although in my case the charges were eventually dropped or I was eventually acquitted, the national and local police agencies created a situation where, based on their false accusations against me, any police officer could shoot me on sight. It was not until the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the mid-70s that we began to see the scope of the United States government's persecution of political activists. At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty. To make a long story short, I was captured in New Jersey in 1973 after being shot with both arms held in the air and then shot again from the back. I was left on the ground to die, and when I did not, I was taken to a local hospital where I was threatened, beaten, and tortured. In 1977, I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. The New Jersey State Police and other law enforcement officials say they want to see me brought to justice. But I would like to know what they mean by justice. Is torture justice? I was kept in solitary confinement for more than 2 years, mostly in men's prisons. Is that justice? My lawyers were threatened with imprisonment.
I just want to spend a minute talking about a couple of the, you know, some of the parallels between mass incarceration and Jim Crow, and then, you know, end it. Once I get started talking here, I can go. But consider some of the rules and laws that apply to those labeled felons today, and ask yourself if they remind you of a bygone era. Denial of the right to vote. Right? 48 states, the District of Columbia denied prisoners the right to vote. Now, mind you, that's not the case in other Western democracies. You know, in fact, in other countries, there are often voting campaigns within prisons. There's voting drives within prisons. In other Western democracies, you don't forfeit your citizenship when you go to prison. You're still a person. You're still a citizen. You're still part of that country, even if you're in prison, you get to vote. In the United States, nearly every state denies prisoners the right to vote, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because then once you're released, you can be denied a right to vote for a period of years, maybe until your probation or parole expires, or for the rest of your life. It's up to the individual state. And nationwide, about 1 in 8 black men are either temporarily or permanently disenfranchised as a result of felon disenfranchisement laws. Exclusion from jury service. You know, one hallmark of the Jim Crow era, of course, was all-white juries, you know, particularly in the South. Well, these all-white juries have had a roaring comeback in recent years. Why? Well, in part because anyone convicted of a felony is considered automatically ineligible for jury service. Automatically ineligible for jury service. And then, get this, if you've ever had a negative experience with law enforcement, you could be struck from a jury for cause. You know, prosecutors able to persuade the judge that that negative experience that you have with law enforcement might bias your judgment in a criminal case. Now, good luck finding.
Right.
Many African Americans, particularly of Portuguese of color, who have not yet had a negative experience with law enforcement that conceivably biased them in a criminal case. So even in some areas with relatively large black populations, you see all-white or nearly all-white jury.
Today, officials decree that rapper Brad Jordan, alias Scarface, must be stopped. After being monitored by Secret Service agents for 2 years, evidence leads tobacco and firearms officials to believe that his literally dope lyrics promote drug usage and distribution, degrade women, influence gambling, promote and teach violence, and more importantly, it's influencing our minors and destroying our communities. Officials say he's the lord of underground rap. Him and his music must be stopped.
We got this whole motherfucker on the mission. Now the whole entire world has gotta try to come up with a quick decision. They claim we threats to society, and now they're calling on the government to try to make somebody quiet for the bullshit they done to me. Gangsta Nip Spice warned that Tupac never gave a gun to me. So gangsta rap ain't done shit for that. I've even seen white folks from River Oaks don't get to get. So why you trying to kick some dust up? America's always been known for blaming us niggas, but they fucked up. And we were always considered evil. Now they're trying to bust our only code of communicating with our people. Let's peep the game from a different angle. Matt Dillon pulled his pistol every time him when someone tangled. So why you criticize me for the shit that you see on your TV? That's freaks worse than PG. Just bring your ass to where they got me, so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
So now they trying separation and sending black folks in white coats to infiltrate our congregation. Tapping into our conversation, taking the message that they get, bring forth wrong premeditation. So David's got a silver man. While listening to Brad, David gets pissed and kills his dad. David Duke's got a shotgun. So why you get upset? Cause I got one. A ticket, a casket. A nigga got his ass kicked, shot in the face by a cop, closed casket. An open and shut situation. Cop gets got, they wanna blame it on my occupation. If you don't dig me, then nigga, you can sue. Because the shit that I be saying ain't worse than a Western movie. Don't blame me, blame your man, got it. So you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
You better free your mind before I free my nine and stop fucking with Detroit or pop. I feel my hot rocks. Bang bang, boom boom, ping ping. I'm the black white boy's got a magazine and don't know how to act. I attack and make you vomit. Down with Khaled, I do Muhammad. Do we got a brother? I'm Nick Nail. I'm the illest. Wanna kill this house nigga Don Cornelius. Can you feel this? You punk niggas make me sick. Sucking on the devil's dick, scared of revolution. Need to start douching. Houston is the place. I caught a case. The motherfuckers tried to put a scar on my face. But I bust two times to the guts. Do the Reverend Calvin bust. Got a pair of nuts. I started this gangster shit in 86. Now you're dissing me for publicity. Isn't he a hoe to the third degree? Who me? I'm a G that like to scrap a lot. Down with rap a lot. And I can't stop, won't stop. So fuck Bill and Hillary. Ice Cube, it ain't no killing me. Ice Cube, Scarface, dropping it on these sellout ass niggas. Doing it like
nigga don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
My mother, my father, sisters, my brother, they were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term that calls for a one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in the state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school program. But now on the side, I was studying things that I felt would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, control mechanism. Create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates, control inmates. And black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary. The black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Johnson had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Johnson felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those five civilians. I'm thinking that Johnson was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be solved.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You're asking me to confess to something?
As an assassin. Unless you wanted to. Did you feel that?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is to maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until it's been proven. And they'll never be able to prove it.
Know what I mean? It's war. Know what I mean? Yo, stick. I mean, shit be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. When you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gat battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kiss versus Beans or P versus Ho? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean?
Well, it is to my family, my mother, my father, sisters, my brother, Jonathan. They were intended to familiarize them with the situation I was faced with here. Of course, here in prison, we see the repression, the exploitation, the victimization of lower class.
In 61, Jackson was 19 years old, and he received the indeterminate sentence of 1 year to life.
Well, I was incarcerated under a one to life, a term they call for a one to life, where I could have done 1 year and been released. I've done 10. That's more time than anybody in this state has ever done on a one to life. I went through all the processes. I tried to get out. I went to school, program, but now on the side, I was studying things that I felt would help the community.
Those on the right saw him as the most powerful threat in the prison system.
I think racism is a control device, control mechanism. Create an atmosphere whereby they can control inmates, control inmates. Black is just a continuation.
He was the true revolutionary, the black communist guerrilla in the highest state of development.
I'd be the last one to say that Johnson had suicide in mind. I'm certain that Johnson felt that the police would have some concern, would give some concern to the lives of those five civilians. I'm thinking that Johnson was trying to demonstrate to the public, to the people, just how he felt that these problems should be solved.
Was the incident for which you're charged now, was it a revolutionary act on your part?
You're asking me to confess to something?
Yeah.
Unless
happened. You wanted to. Did you kill a man?
Look, one of the most important elements of guerrilla warfare is maintain secrecy. I've killed nobody until it's been proven. And they'll never be able to prove it.
The point, I think the principal point behind the prison movement is to prove to the establishment that the concentration camp technique, the reversion to the second dimension of fascism, the terrorist face, but to prove that the terrorism won't work on us, it won't stop our movement, that nothing, actually, short of death. We're going to stop our move. It's progress to the point now where the courts are in a position where they're not pressured into giving us some sort of appeasement, and that of course catches the prison personnel, staff, the pigs here up in Cross. They have no way at all whatsoever now to protect themselves except through sheer, brutal, open terror. You understand what I'm saying? The comrades here, they feel, the pigs feel the comrades here have lost their reservation, their hold.
They still feel that?
But they're convinced of it now.
I mean, after the last week?
Right. I'm talking about the whole state. I'm talking about throughout the state. Mm-hmm. You've heard about the intentions of strike. Yeah, they intended to strike and ask for increased wage. What do you call it? The hazard pay? Wait. It catches the prison pigs up in a cross. They know that the courts are in a mood now to appease. They also know that the comrades don't fear the courts any longer. That forces them. Right. To revert to terrorism, out-and-out terrorism. Just 2 days ago, they beat one black almost to death in the hospital.
One of the things that people outside are wondering is how you can use your case and other cases to work as an organizing tool. You know, I mean, without bypassing all means. Legal means, court means, mass action, and stuff like that. How can people on the outside, what kind of things can they do to make real changes and that kind of stuff and put checks on them?
Well, it fits right in with the monumental problem, the monumental historical problem, the antithesis of taking it whole. Our opinion is that the reason we haven't been able to move forward. It's because left wing factions can't unite. They just haven't been able to unite here in this country, and very few other countries. And we've been hoping that on our substructural level, the substructural level of the prison movement, we could possibly provide an example for the rest of the movement. And because the oppression of the need to unite in our particular substructural level is overt and clear. Mm-hmm. We're faced with overt, clear terrorism, oppression. And being that our need is greatest, we figure that we're hoping, we have been hoping, that we could first do the Vanguard, leadership of the Vanguard Party. We could first involve the community, show the community that the difference is that the National Advertising Council has convinced us that our present really are illusion. We want to convince them that in the community that the differences are illusion. Of course, we run into some snags. The snags being, as far as I'm concerned, being part of the present mentality in general. The things I've noticed. The problems I've noticed generally center around the fact that people don't quite understand what democratic centralism is. They seem to, now our ideal is to project ourselves into the future, of course, but at the same time we have to realize that we have to understand that we're not quite all capable of. Well, all opinions are equal. And we have to have some sort of centralism. Our preference, of course, is democratic centralism. You know, and people don't understand that that's a necessity at this stage. That what we're working towards is the point where all opinions will be equal, all men equal. But right now, we have to have the guidance and the purposeful
leadership of a Vanguard Party.
Like Lenin says, Central Committee, you know, General Staff of the Peace Party.
How do you think that kind of Vanguard Party can be developed, or do you think that it has been developed in the Black Panther Party?
I'm Black Panther, of course. Vanguard Party, I'm a Black Panther Party.
Do you think that the Black Panther Party is the Vanguard Party for just the Black community and the white community?
No. I believe pretty soon, all those questions, as far as I'm concerned, will be cleared up. The paper is going to run a series of articles where I discuss the nature of fascism in general, and in particular, towards the end, the form that it took here in the United States. In one paragraph or two, you would find a statement that, one of my principal beliefs is that the fact that we're the most oppressed class, most oppressed segment of society, the fact that we're at the bottom of the pyramid, we're going to take the initiative. Is that background noise?
Yeah,
no, we're going to have to take the initiative. I feel that our job is to begin the process. Once the process is begun, once we've provided the example, it's my hope, or our hope, that the intercommunal ideal will spread from our community to yours, the other community. But of course, we know what the term Vanguard means. It puts us out front.
Black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Brother Nat Turner, and co-host, myself, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland. Also, our National Minister of Communication, Sister Amina. Call in each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-92. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, Black August, Week 1. We want to give a shout-out to Yuhuru Media, Brother Kathy Sadiq, for that major, powerful mix that he put together for us. We're going to open up our lines for our host, People's Political Party National Chair, Brother Nat Turner. Black power. Can you hear me, Chairman?
Yes, I can, brother man. Black power. Word up,
black
man.
Black power, comrade.
Yes, sir. You know, we also say Yuhuru too, you know. Tonight we want to start off this month, the first show of this month. And this month is known to those of us who consider ourselves politically conscious of the struggle of African people on this side of the world in this country. The month of August being a commemoration, a remembrance, paying homage and honor to those who made the sacrifices. In some cases, you know, the ultimate sacrifices of their lives. Those who became political prisoners as a result of the war against state-sponsored war against proponents of the Black Liberation Movement, the Black Liberation Struggle, the continual struggle of 500 years of European decadence. It's been, you know, projected on to people of African descent who come in more recent times as a result of the the slave trade, the institutionalization of forced slavery by the use of violence and terror, and where the holdovers, the remaining vestiges of that inhumane experience, which in itself had shaped us in such a way that we're almost, have been extremely turned inside out due to the dominance of the European psyche. The European pathological behavior, which has resulted in the mass decadence that has inflicted, you know, the black community collectively in general, or black communities around this country. And it's left us in a position where we have been struggling to take our own lives back into our own hands, and to struggle in such a way that sacrifices must be made and will have been made, as with any other group that faces oppression in its various forms. More toward the 60s, there was a growing dragon, if I must say, and I'll explain why I use, you know, this legendary creature as a quintessential example of what it is that the state would deem as very alarming, threatening, or possess the potential and ability to topple its rule, its dominance over black people. But the 60s was a time when things had begun to reach a apex of the disenfranchised, you know, which is one of the terms that has been used to describe the conditions, the cause and effect, the conditions that you see today, which still lingers on from the 60s. To struggle against that in a heightened manner, in a heightened way, beyond the usual or the more presented orthodox mode of struggle, you know, the freedom movement, you know, and we have to be very clear on the terminologies, you know, these labels that are out there, you know, because it without it, we wouldn't be able to untangle the mess, you know, that we're in when it comes to, you know, placing things and terminologies and labels and phrases and adjectives or whatever. There's a attitude that had begun to brew specifically in the 60s as a result of, you know, the historical legacy of the treatment of black people in this country. And this began to take on a persona of revolution, you know. Some tend to use the term revolution or speak, you know, revolution in the abstract. But there were certain forces in our midst that learned to understand that for black people to collectively alleviate their problems, that we would have to go through a revolutionary catechism, if I must say. And that was the hardcore version of the struggle, whereas the softer version, or the soft version, was the civil rights movement for you know, desegregation, integration, and being let in on the piece of the pie, you know. And those who profess that, or the leadership, you know, and of course, you know, the person that actually comes to mind is, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King, a strategy based on the history of black people having built this country. And so therefore, you know, this is our country too. You know, it wouldn't be wise, you know, to argue against that, you know. But it would also be wise, or would not be wise, to not acknowledge the type of system that we live under in this country, which drives people into decadence. And so as a result of that, like when you take a 16 or 20 ounce bottle of Coca-Cola and you shake it up, and then, you know, you try to spin the top off, and we all know what happens. The acid inside this bottle, the Coke, a chain reaction, a physical motion, generates a heat or an energy that makes it, you know, explode or pop. And this was what the 60s was like. You know, you had a number of things going on. You know, the Vietnam War, the contradictions over that. America spreading its tentacles around the world, declaring some type of democracy coming to the rescue of those who, you know, profess to be civilized, the French, that is, which had taken Vietnam and turned it into its own private monopoly. A colony. And of course, you know, coming to the rescue of their white French friends, the Americans. And so the fiasco of Vietnam was a disaster. On the home front, there was mass dissidents against it, confrontations with the pigs on the streets, protests. And in the midst of that, the black struggle. The time was ripe in a sense. And so there was certain forces in our midst that, you know, sought to seize the time. And this had become the nucleus of the black liberation movement. And part of that huge part of the Black Panther Party and the underground apparatus, which you know, is now known in more popular circles now as the Black Liberation Army. And due to that, this struggle for liberation had begun to reach a, you know, sort of a climax. And which led to political prisoners. And it's not as much because they stole a pack of now leaders due to their political views that they had become political prisoners, that they were opposed to the state because it was felt that the relationship with the state was an irreconcilable one. And again, what we mean by the state, by definition, based on Chairman O'Malley Yeshitilla, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, which work in concerted effort to continue to maintain what some of us can call or describe as the status quo, or the continual perpetuation of the structure of things featuring the white ruling class and their middle class white flunkies in extension, and that the businessman served his own selfish interests and his religion, profit motive, and capitalism is his Bible. And of course, the judge being the protector in so-called the legal realm. And of course, the police being the protector on the streets, out in society. Their role in capitalism, protecting and preserving the property class, which has had a history, you know, going back to what we know as Western Europe. Those who control the power, the production, you know, the means of production, and keeping themselves in lofty positions, accumulating mass capital, and then taking that mass capital and financing the things that they seek to be in possession of, pretty much weapons of mass destruction, to continue to possess a police force locally, statewide, and even internationally, or federally and internationally. I say all of these things just to, you know, to paint a picture, you know, the lead up to the inevitable contradictions, which when pushing a people over the top forces them into another type of being and seeking to strike for the liberation, which brings them into contact with the state, into, you know, a battle with the state. And to make the sacrifices, assassinations, chased out of the country, thrown in these penal colonies, these gulags, these concentration camps as political prisoners. And as a result, we have what is called Black August, chiefly in honor and commemoration of those who have sacrificed their lives and the continued struggle to free all political prisoners that this country refuses to acknowledge. More specifically, there was the death of Qatari Golden in 1978 on August 1st. And this is the date that has been recognized as the start of Black Ops, acknowledging the death of Qatari Golden, who died while being held captive in San Quentin penal colony due to the lack of medical treatment along the lines of that nature. Previously to that, you had the 1970 August 7th, Jonathan Jackson rebellion in Marin County, California courthouse. And that was basically centered around the Soledad brothers. And the Soledad brothers were George Jackson, Fleeta Drumgold, and John Cluche, who were accused of the murder of prison guard John Mills in January 1970. As you all may have heard the audio clips of George Jackson himself speaking, there was what some like to refer to as a riot on the yard previous to that. And it had a racial tone to it, you know. And so the brothers, you know, trying to show some type of solidarity, dealing with the racist nature of the prison guards, and of course the racist nature also of, you know, prisons, you know. And this fight broke out on the yard, and the guards up at the tower at the top had taken upon themselves to use their rifles, and they had murdered a brother. And so these brothers saw that as a discriminatory effort targeting only the black prisoners on the yard. And so this is what sparked an escalation in the the relationship, you know, with the brothers who were being held captive. And soon after that, this prison guard was thrown off the top tip. And because of who George Jackson had come to be, he had became the first person that they nabbed and had accused of murdering his prison guard, along with Fleeta Drumgold and John Cluche. And they were to be put on trial in Marin County Courthouse August 7th, 1970. And this is when Jonathan Jackson had entered the courthouse with several weapons, and he had armed comrades who had been on trial, and it was an attempt to liberate them. And in the parking lot, a firefight, you know, an assault on the van in which Jonathan Jackson had used
to make its way there and to liberate his comrades. And as a result, Jonathan Jackson and I believe Fleet of Drumgoat were murdered. And John Cluche was a survivor. And, of course, the judge was killed in the process, having had a shotgun taped to his neck. And, you know, the shotgun having been fired, which is what expired the judge. And these are the things that had become the hallmark of Black August, centered around George Jackson and the political prisoners in general. And one political prisoner that come to mind was Geronimo Pratt. Geronimo Pratt was a ex-military, soldier who participated in Vietnam and had come back from Vietnam and, having heard about the situation at home. And there's a video clip of Geronimo Pratt explaining his attitude. He fought a war in Vietnam. He come back home to fight the war here. The liberation struggle against the state. And this is the moment when Geronimo Pratt joined the Black Panther Party, the Los Angeles chapter, along with other comrades on the West Coast, such as the brother name escapes me right now, but Bunchy Carter, who was a former Street Tribe leader during that time, in the late 60s. And Geronimo Pratt had become a political prisoner and charged with the murder 1972, convicted with the murder of Carolyn Olson, a white woman named Carolyn Olson. And due to the COINTELPRO operations, counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO for short, that was conducted by the FBI under the leadership of J. Edgar Hoover. And so Geronimo Pratt had become a political prisoner. And there were others who would become political prisoners around the country. And this was the strategy and tactic to neutralize those who had an impact in the Black Liberation Movement. And being on the outside, organizing the people, and of course, the Black Panther Party's 10-point platform. You see, and of course, as I said, as a result of that, a number of the Black Panther Party members, had become political prisoners. Even the leader, Huey P. Newton, charged with the murder of an Oakland pig due to a so-called traffic stop one night. And being held as a on murder charges, and it is the nature of the state, to by any means necessary, to preserve itself, to continue to perpetuate itself. Okay, and so with the Jonathan Jackson rebellion, a year later, 1971, August 21st, in the month of August, you had the political murder of George Jackson. There was this there's this story about the escape attempt of George Jackson on that date, and this alleged attempt on the part of George Jackson to scale one heck of a high-ass prison wall with no rope, with no nothing. But there's a documentary that was made about George Jackson. The San Francisco Bay News put together a documentary called Dead Gun. And some of that audio that you know was played is from that documentary. And I recommend any brother or sister who wants to understand somewhat who George Jackson was, I would recommend that you watch this documentary. So with his murder, there was another group, of course, in San Quentin prison, that became known as the San Quentin Six. And the San Quentin Six consisted of Hugo, Yogi Pinnell, Willie Tate, Johnny Spain, David Johnson, Fleeta Drumgo, Luis Talamante, and Luis Talamantes. And they had become known as the San Quentin Six, who were accused of participating in the so-called prison escape. And that, of course, it was political, you know. And this is how we had come to this point of, you know, commemorating those in this month of August due to the events, things that had taken place with the Black Liberation Movement on the part of those who were the highest types of black men that this country could ever produce, or be contrary to the notion of, you know, the first black governor of Virginia, Douglas Wilder, you know, the first black top military general of the United States Army, Colin Powell, the one in two times of appointing black Supreme Court members, Thurgood Marshall, Clarence Thomas, and more recent times, the appointing of the first black female Supreme Court justice on the part of Joe Biden, you know, so-called Democratic president. And so we say, contrary to that notion about our boys and our girls modeling themselves after such individuals, you know, in the sense of, you know, making something of oneself, becoming successful in life. And we would rather say, as I just said, that the highest type of black man and black woman that this country could ever produce were those who, in the 60s and the 70s, who raised the conscious level of the people to move the people to taking back, you know, their lives back into their own hands. The case of Assata Shakur, who had started off New York Black Panther Party and had decided to go underground and become a member of the Black Liberation Army. And here you had a black woman who was very brave. And it could be embarrassing when you have a black woman who was willing to put it all on the line, you know, for her people's liberation. And while you have black men who stood by and did nothing, or who was afraid to join the fray. And so Asad Shakur, formerly known as Joanne Chesimore, which the state still recognizes and refuses to acknowledge as Asad Shakur. And the attempt on her life, 1973 on the New Jersey Turnpike, in the deep of the night. Zaid Shakur and Sundiata Kohli, two of her comrades she was traveling with, and they had been pulled over. And in an instant, the pigs had blood in their eye. And one of these pigs had didn't make it. Zaid Shakur was murdered. Sundiata Kohli managed to survive and escape. And Asad Shakur had become heavily wounded and was later charged with the murder of this so-called police officer. And around 1981, after had been a political prisoner for a number of years, had been liberated from her prison cell, from the penal colony in which she was a POW, prisoner of war, and whisked away to the tiny sovereign island of Cuba, which at that time was under the leadership of Fidel Castro, who had liberated the Cuban people from underneath the dictator Fulgencio Batista, who was backed by the CIA. And her escape there was a serious blow to the state, so much so that the state had cried a $1 million bounty on her head, and had become number one on the most wanted list. And in more recent times, the bounty was raised to $2 million, I believe, which is still stands there. And of course, you know, she still remains in Cuba, a political prisoner. Like I said, it's a number of brothers, you know, who had become the targets of the counterintelligence program. And over the years, the organizing, the campaign to keep alive on the outside world, those who had been held captive due to their political views. In more recent times, the state making its strategic moves due to the present conditions of what lies ahead. And that is the inevitable collapse of this system. And so in more recent times, they have unleashed, as one of comrades I know like to put it, a number of political prisoners, Jalil Muhammad King being the latest. And Jalil Muhammad King, lesser known than Martin Luther King or Ralph Bunche or, you know, Ralph Abernathy, and even these individuals who we are told are our heroes in the school system. Which one of my comrades like to refer to as the public school system, and rightfully so, because it can make a fool of your child. He was a member of the Black Liberation Army, Sekou Odinga. These were real and true OGs, revolutionary OGs. Sekou Odinga had been unleashed
a number of years ago in more recent time. There's also referred to as the Angola Three, who had been held as prisoners of war in the largest penal colony in America, the Angola Plantation in the state of Louisiana. And in more recent times, the last of the three, Albert Woodfox, had been unleashed from his cage. The charge against Angola Three, you know, murder charge, and it had been shown that they could not have committed this crime, you know, in Angola, and so it was clearly because of their political views and what they had managed to do in the Louisiana State Penal Colony of Angola by establishing a Black Panther chapter. And they had thus become public enemy number one, you know. In Philadelphia, we have the young Mumia Abu-Jamal at the time, who had joined the Philadelphia branch of the Black Panther Party, who was also a whiz at journalism. And his setup and charged with the murder of a Philadelphia pig, and therefore becoming a political prisoner in that part of the country. Russell Maroon Schultz, these were, you know, he had also been a member of the Black Liberation Army. Albert Noel Washington, member of the Black Liberation Army. And as we speak today, as we speak now, many of us have become familiar with Mutula Shakur. And of course, you know, we're, you know, a lot of us are familiar with the last name as a result of hip hop's, you know, Tupac Shakur, Tupac Amaru Shakur, who was Tupac's father, who raised him. And Mutula Shakur had been a member of the Republic of New Africa, and had also, you know, been a part of the Black Liberation Army movement, accused of a Brinks truck armed robbery, in which two officers were murdered, and had been charged not only with that crime, but having been the mastermind behind the action that was taken to expropriate funds to help finance the struggle, the revolutionary struggle against those who had been robbing capital in the most sophisticated ways. And of course, there were also a white woman named Marilyn Buck, who had also been charged in cahoots with this Brinks robbery. And Marilyn Buck being a white woman who had become an involved revolutionary and declared opponent of the state and its capitalist nature. And there, of course, there were those who, you know, there were revolutionary whites, and the Black Panther Party had understood
in a much larger scale, in a much more expanded form of the struggle against capitalism, where they were not afraid or didn't feel any worries about acknowledging the poor whites who had become disaffected, you know, by their rich whites, the rich whites. And of course, you know, this is recognized as the class struggle, you know, against the white ruling class. And so the Black Panther Party had took on a much larger posture in complicating the matters that the state would have to deal with in order to, you know, to maintain its position within society. And so therefore the Black Panther Party didn't have any reservations about working or being in cahoots with revolutionary whites. And that had been stated, you know, by Bobby Seale at one point at the Oakland Alameda County Courthouse steps, where he had spoke to the whites and said, you know, we don't hate you because you're white. We hate you because you're white and you ain't doing shit. And so some of those whites who had become disaffected had, become avowed revolutionaries, you know. And in Chicago, you had Fred Hampton, leader of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, who had also took on the same posture. And of course, this has been discussed and even debated. There have been what would be some would turn into or perceive as contradictions. Part of how the Black liberation struggle is to be defined. But if you check a historical legacy of struggles, you will see what power does when the oppressed are seeking to come out from underneath the oppressor. And these situations are bound to occur. And so, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, you know, in a sense, to realize that, yeah, there'll be one or two, you know, not from our tribe is going to come along and, you know, lend a helping hand. And that is not a great big problem unless one practices a very narrow form of nationalism. You see, when people are not in a power position as absolutists, then by nature, you know, there will come a time when other forces will appear. And it is up to us to decide to make whether or not, or to determine whether or not these outside forces are, you know, valuable enough to work alongside with. And in the process, you know, that become white political prisoners who are also opposed to the Vietnam War. You know, there was also during that time the Weathermen. Which was a group that had taken out actions, you know, against state property, bombings, and, you know, would claim responsibility during that time, you know. And so this was a time when the, you know, when Malcolm had said the case of the chickens coming home to roost, you know. And so, in any struggle, there's bound to be political prisoners. There's bound to be those who had become captured in combat. the Black Panther Party coming under attack. It's a form of war. The local chapter headquarters in Chicago and Los Angeles, back to back, coming under attack. The murder of Fred Hampton, who they couldn't obtain long enough to have him being away from the people by having him being in one of their gulags, charged with liberating, I believe, 70 ice cream bars. So his stint as a brief political prisoner. And these are the things that we, you know, keep alive and try to politicize the masses of our people as a continued struggle for our liberation, you know. And the question of whether or not but let me say this before I enter this thing I want to include. As a result of the murder of George Jackson, you know, soon after that, you had the Attica prison riot. This is referred to as a prison riot. You know, the Attica prison riot in upstate New York. And there's old footage of the Attica, what they like to say, the Attica prison riot, you know. And they would not make a correlation between the murder of George Jackson and the Attica prison rebellion. Because they couldn't afford to let it be known that the Attica prison rebellion was in response to the murder of George Jackson. And so this is a premeditated uprising, not some spontaneous thing on the part of the prisons, while at the same time bringing some exposure, some attention, some national exposure to the prison conditions, you know, not only in Attica, but around the country. And therefore, the, you know, the charge of inhumane conditions under a country which professes to be a democracy and not a regime, and while at the same time charging other countries of having political prisoners. The term gulag, used in the Russian parlance of the Russian gulag, and these past and even present presidents, leaders of Russia were accused of imprisoning individuals, not because they stole some vodka, but because of their political views, and even in the sense of assassinating some of those who had been turned against the state. But the Attica prison rebellion, which occurred soon after the murder of George Jackson, in less than a month, in the month of September, in the early part of September 1971. And that is how much of an impact that George Jackson had on the U.S. prison system. And in the midst of that, George Jackson had also founded the Black Guerrilla Family. And the Black Guerrilla Family had become the prison wing of the struggle, of the guerrilla struggle against the state within the prison system. The toppling of the capitalist prison system is war. It's being juxtaposed to the prison industrial complex, which recently we've done a broadcast on the prison industrial complex and its mechanisms, its uses. One in particular being a way to neutralize political dissidents, creating certain prison facilities, certain sections of the so-called prison, this concentration camp, to so-called break the prisoner, to break this dissident, to drive him out of an existence, to break him. And George Jackson had commented that even though they may push me out of society, they will never be able to count me among the broken. And this is inspiration to some of us, if not all of us. You know? And George Jackson's starting of the Black Guerrilla Family, him and Conrad James Carr. And James Carr had managed to also write a book, In a Pig's Eye. And James Carr had made it known that his proceeds were not to go to flashy things. It was, you know, his proceeds was to go to the struggle, to the maintenance of the prison struggle. George Jackson and the Black Guerrilla Family. And this was the real and true threat. And with the murder of George Jackson, the Black Guerrilla Family had to obviously continue on a path. And the old saying, cut off the head of the snake, of course, naturally, you know, the rest of the body dies. You know? And today, the Black Guerrilla Family is not necessarily what it was intended on being when it was founded by George Jackson, you know. And these are the type of tragedy, these are the type of hits and misses that we have experienced in this country, the type of hardships on the part of those who made the decision to go beyond the usual thing that had been shoved down the throats of Black people collectively on the part of a certain selfish cliquish interest, which, you know, goes under several names. You know, some of us may have recognized them or for the first time hear of the Boulay. You know, the Negro bourgeoisie, to use the French term, which had become popularized by Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, who had popularized socialism, which is antithetical to capitalism, and have pretty much disentangled the whole capitalist pie, and have shown capitalism to be filled with nothing but contradictions. And in the end, these contradictions would be its own death knell. And that time is now. We have reached this stage at which point that Marx and Engels and the rest of the modern proponents of Marxism or socialism, what have you. Also, Mao Zedong. Mao Zedong having said so much so that, you know, freedom, you know, comes through the barrel of a shotgun. And Chairman Mao had hosted, you know, Huey P. Newton, Robert Williams, who had become the godfather the Black Armed Self-Defense, upon which influenced the Black Panther Party. And Robert Williams himself having become a target of J. Edgar Hoover's program to neutralize those who possess the ability to affect the masses in the way which will lead to the toppling of the state. And so here Robert Williams himself had to flee the country. You know, and these are the episodes that our youth deserve to know, our boys, and not only our boys, but our little girls. It is their right to know and understand who Assata Shakur was during those times and is during these days. All groups have their own heroes that have had an impact on their lives and the struggles of their peoples. You can go around the world, and when you go around the world, you see black and brown people's heroes who had developed the understanding that white supremacy and racism and capitalism together could never have been any good for black and brown people, you know, and specifically black people in this country, you know. And while behind enemy lines, deep behind enemy lines, Mutubula Shakur, the effects that he had had in the prison population, Tunde Ada Coley, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Jalil Mundakin, these elders were able to articulate the struggle on pen and pad and get it out, you know, still to the public, you know. George Jackson himself had written two books. One is known as Soledad Brother. Of course, you know, I'd mentioned him being one of the three Soledad brothers. And his other book, Blood in My Eye. And these books should be readily accessible, just as much as Iceberg Slim's books are readily accessible, you know, to the streets. And we make no bones about that. It is our right to understand from those who were genuinely trying to get us to see, wake us up, you know, get us to understand. And of course, this protracted struggle against the state, you know, it was not going to be a cakewalk, was not going to be easy. But however, due to the circumstances, the state in its eating at its own leg serves to our advantage, you know. And people like George Jackson had recognized that. And George Jackson had went to prison over a $61 gas station robbery around 1959, and had been given a sentence of from one to life. That right there in itself shows the fascist nature of the state while claiming to be a democracy, you know. But however, as George Jackson began to, you know, serve as a prisoner of war, had become a politicized prisoner of war, a prisoner of, and in his blood in my eye, he clearly states that, in so many words, that he had, you know, gotten straight his understanding or woke up when he had met Mao, you know, Ho Chi Minh, Guevara, and Garang. You know, and John Garang is the black brother in the Sudan who had been the leader of the struggle against the imperialistic endeavors, tactics that were carried out against the country of Sudan in East Central Africa due to its wealth and natural resources. And so Garang had become a notable figure in Sudan. And so as a result of that, George Jackson had become familiar with him. And understanding Mao in China, the leader of the liberation struggle against Japanese imperialism. And so you have what's called Maoism. Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam having adapted Comrade Mao's understanding, and at the same time through the Vietnamese people's experience, you know, and his comrade in arms, Vo Nguyen Giap, who had become the leader of the military wing of the Vietnamese resistance against capitalist imperialism, and how the Vietnamese, you know, basically sought to come out from underneath the rule of thumb of the French. And as I said earlier, the Americans coming to the defense or the help of their white French brethren. In the past show, I mentioned NATO. The United Nations, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, United Nations, which is a cover for the white capitalist imperialists to the point where they, you know, make it look like it's a collage of nations, black, brown, red, yellow, and white. No. But the ideology is what is the linchpin, that an attack on France is an attack on America, and so forth. And so when 9/11 happened, the attack on America was an attack on Britain, and the rest of the NATO countries. And so that attack that they had reached, that whenever one of them had come under attack, the rest of them with joining the fray. And so this is what George Jackson had understood. And he articulated it in his book, Blood in My Eye, in Soledad Brothers, his prison letters. You know, and making the correlation between the struggle on the outside of the wall and the struggle on the inside the wall, and the solidarity with the liberationists who were out in society. And as a result, the impact of George Jackson been drafted as the National Field Marshal of the Black Panther Party. Field Marshal George is what his comrades referred to him as. No. Being the leader of the prison struggle against the prison industrial complex. And so today, what do we have now? Is there any political prisoners in more recent times who have become victimized by the state, or victims of the state's apparatus to continue to neutralize those of us who see ourselves as revolutionaries, those of us who continue the ideology, the attitude, the state of mind of a George Jackson. And I cannot forget, God forbid, that failed to mention A-Trap Brown, you know, Imam Jameel El-Amin, formerly of the Black Panther Party, formerly of the organization previous to the Black Panther Party, known as SNCC, which is an acronym standing for the Student Nonviolent, New Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, at which point, under his leadership, he had changed the name to the Student National Coordinating Committee because he felt it was suicide to be nonviolent with those who were violent against you. And this goes all the way back to Robert Williams, who had established what we now know to be as gun clubs. You know, Robert Williams had been a military participant in the state's imperial endeavors to copy or pick up where the British were leaving off in their imperial conquest in several parts of the earth. You know, their imperial colonies around the country, around the world. You know, and so years after the Black Panther Party had been defeated militarily, had been devastated by the counterintelligence programs carried out in different states around the country through the various field officers of the FBI, you know, and Imam Jameel had never given up his commitment for the liberation of African people. The only thing that had changed about Imam Jameel was his grabbing hold or embracing the way of life of Islam, of a Muslim. And so having been settled in Georgia near Atlanta or in Atlanta, he had transformed the whole community. And it was as a result of the effects of Imam Jameel that Imam Jameel had finally been reeled in through the counterintelligence program operations, which they claim had been put to bed in the 70s, in this 1970s, I believe it's 75. You know, this hearing, this sham kangaroo hearing, to give the perception that these judicial committees and what have you, you know, were coming down on the violations of Americans' rights by the FBI and counterintelligence programs and all the different tactics that they use, and particularly wiretappings, you know, your so-called right to privacy. You know, and many of us think that the NSA is some new shit because of Frank Snowden or Edward Snowden, whatever his name is. But that is not the case. They had always been in action. It was just that somebody had finally, like they like to say, blown the whistle, and it just so happened to be Edward Snowden. But they had been in operation. And that is how a lot of the Black Panther members, Black Liberation Army members, were able to be picked off, you know, victimized, you know, with this war against the Panthers and members of the Black Liberation Army, and ended up becoming political prisoners. And the linchpin was the alleged murders, police officers. In New York, you had the New York 21. One of the members of was a Fiend Shakur, Tupac Shakur's mom. And Daruba Ben Wahid, formerly known as Richard Moore, who had become a victim of COINTELPRO and had served time as a political prisoner until he was unleashed around the beginning of the 90s, if I'm not mistaken, or 89, somewhere around there. No. And again, of course, their political views. No. And their particular type of way of looking at the state and their struggle. No. But with Imam Jamil, the charge of murdering an Atlanta police officer. And the story has so many holes in it. A blind man can see. A blind man can see. But the state never stopped its quest to corral Imam Jamil. Even when he had got up in age, his effectiveness in the day, you know, as a political prisoner, and the struggle to, quote unquote, bring him home, and the struggle to in the winding days of Matula Shakur's life, who is gravely sick. Gravely said, you know, and of course, the charge of crimes against humanity against the state in the international court. Now, there's other organizations who have been working hard, you know, for the past 40 years, you know, the Jericho movement, you know, organizations such as that, you know, the prison struggle, even formerly known as Monster Cody, you know, former street tribe member in California, who has taken on the last name of Shakur. And his effectiveness runs so deep that he had stated that he was better off being a member of the street tribe when it came to being around guns, not having one, but being around them, and how effective Sanyika Shakur is in the struggle against the prison industrial complex behind the wall. No. And so this is what Black August is really about. There's this an extension of the Black August commemoration. To expand it into the modern struggle against police terror. And of course, now that we're in the post-George Floyd era, and all the Black people, so-called Black people, coming out of the world work, talking that wee shit. The Black Lives Matter movement, which has been subverted, you know, by these opposing forces, these same hidden forces that approached Eldridge Cleaver, David Hilliard, who was the chief of staff of the Black Panther Party, one early morning. You know, get a knock on his door And there were two white Europeans standing at his door with a briefcase filled with money. And Eldridge Cleaver had been quoted as saying, even when America was on fire, the cities was on fire, you know, as a result of the murder, political murder of Martin Luther King, that there were unseen forces who were working behind the scenes, attempting to hijack the energy. You know, this is what we saw during the George Floyd rebellions when the cities were on fire. You know, and so the expansion of it into police terror. Some of us also recognize the birth of the great Marcus Mosiah Garvey on August 17th. You know. Some of us also acknowledge the Haitian Revolution, which took place in August, of which Mumia Abu-Jamal declares Black August begins with the Haitian Revolution, and how the Maroons, who had, through that guerrilla campaign, had toppled the French. And in school, our students are taught about the Louisiana Purchase, but only to a certain extent, but only so far. But however, they are not taught further that it is as a result of the ass-kicking the French had received from a guerrilla campaign carried out against them, that they were forced to sell Louisiana property because the bankers called in their loans. And so they had to look at their portfolio and see what they had to ditch. It's just like when you're on the ship, and the ship, if you don't take off X amount of weight, then the ship will inevitably sink before it can make it back to the harbor. And so you had to do what? You had to ditch certain things that you may necessarily not want to part with. You know, you may have gone out to sea and discovered a huge satchel of gold. And so you were able to bring this gold onto the boat, onto the ship. But due to the weight of the gold, you had to make a decision, the gold or your life. And so you ditched the goal and tried to remember the location. And so that is what the French had to do as a result of that. And so therefore, that's what brought about the Louisiana Purchase. You know, so again, this is, you know, a preliminary of Black August. Some of this we may come back around to. But just to paint a picture of which, you know, we hope we've done good, a good enough, you know, stroke of the paintbrush, you know, to paint the picture, you know. And stay tuned next week for the second week of Black August. And there, of course, there are commemorations. There are a number of things that are taking place across the country, you know, the whole month on the part of those who have the revolutionary principles intact. Some like to refer to as a revolutionary science, their attitude, you know, the ideology, even swag, you know, and are serious about the liberation struggle and to continue what our elders continue from Haiti to Garvey to the Black Panther Party / Black Liberation Army political prisoners. And so stay tuned next week, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, to In Defense of the Peoples Radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm your host, Chairman Nat Turner, and co-host, Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our incredible DJ on the ones and twos, our National Minister of Communications, Sister Amy Oshun, who does so much, y'all. And I thank God for bringing that sister in my life from day one, from one. So we say, Black Power, your whole rule, man, take us out.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not